Hello, and welcome to Deep and the Wild. I'm Melissa Hawks, and today I'm joined by an old friend, Anthony Garcia, a writer, a podcaster, a speaker, and an all-around fantastic human. We talk about mindfulness and meditation. We talk about engaging with people who have differing opinions than you on the internet in a way that is both loving and honest. And it's such a great conversation. I know you're going to get so much out of it. If you'd like to follow Anthony, he's on Instagram at Anthony Garcy, G-A-R-C-Y. And if you'd like to support the show, you can Venmo me at Melissa B. Hawks. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy yourself. Today, I'm excited to have Anthony Garcia with me. Anthony and I go way, way, way back, probably longer than I want to admit. I remember meeting him, and I don't know if you remember this or not, Anthony, but I remember meeting you when you were like 17.
Oh, yeah.
I was at Bible college, and you were in like a drum group.
Yeah.
That came to play. And then Anthony and I ended up, we ended up being writers together, and I believe I was his editor at Bedlam. And so we've just kind of woven in and out of each other's lives for a while. So Anthony, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and where people can find you on the internet?
Yeah. Writer, speaker, podcaster. I have kind of a collaboration project with my good friend Tim Beeler called The Attention Collection. And that's a podcast. Mm. We're on social media as well, on Instagram, on Facebook. And The Attention Collection podcast is basically this idea that we are never not being formed, right? We're taking all of the elements that are presented to us, the music, the films, the poetry, the conversations, the eavesdroppings, all of that gets into the cracks of our lives and kind of has a hand in shaping us. So that's already true, but what would it look like to intentionally use those things to become the kind of people we want to become? So that's kind of the idea behind what we do on the internet.
I love that. I love that. And your podcast can be found at Attention Collection.
Yep, at The Attention Collection. You can find us on, you know, wherever podcasts are found. So, yeah.
Great. And then if people want to follow you, is there a particular place?
Yeah, we have Attention Collection on Instagram. That's kind of where we put the content. And then just my personal, Anthony Garcy, G-A-R-C-Y, on Instagram.
Great. Great. All right. Awesome. So everyone go follow them and definitely check out that podcast. I'm so fascinated by that. All of those things are things I've been exploring as well in my own life. So I'd love for us just to start with you talking a little bit, and I know on your podcast you kind of discuss this, but you talking a little bit about when that became important to you, when the idea of all of these things shaping us. I mean, I know you and I grew up very similarly from a religious standpoint.
Yeah.
And I know we heard a lot of garbage in, garbage out, like that sort of thing. But what was it that made you now as an adult, as you're kind of being more intentional about that shaping, what made you start thinking about that so often?
Yeah, I think when you kind of get to a certain place, it could be age, but it doesn't necessarily have to be age. You get into this place where you kind of realize you've almost outsourced who you're becoming to whatever is just coming in, whether that be the friendships, the relationships you're a part of. It could be, you know, the religion you grew up in, whatever it might be. We've kind of just handed the keys to other entities to kind of form us and shape us. But then we think back on, you know, the movies that we watched growing up or the songs that we heard, and we can't quite articulate why, maybe, but they got in there somewhere and they kind of formed a narrative in our minds for the way we want to view the world, kind of what we hope the world could be. And that's also true in the reverse, right? It's also true for the negative narratives that get in there. And those can be attached to religion as well, but they can be attached to relationships. And so I think just being at a place in life where you want to be more intentional about who you're becoming and what you're putting into the world. And so then you start to think about, well, what are the things that are helping me to do that? And that's kind of where you start paying attention to all of the stuff that's shaping you. So that's kind of been my journey. And then the podcast has really just been a chance for me to kind of hold myself accountable to that practice of what am I paying attention to? What am I giving my time to? What are the things that are shaping me? So as I'm kind of speaking about these things, I'm also paying more attention and then hopefully helping other people do the same as well. So.
I love that. I love it. And I love that you called it a practice, because that's the sort of thing I know many people listening are building into their life and figuring out, right? We're all kind of figuring that out. So what are the things right now that you are allowing to shape you, that you're being intentional about allowing to shape you? What type of input are you putting in right now?
You know what's interesting is obviously, I'm, try to do kind of mindfulness practice and meditation, and there are, pulling from different spiritual traditions, even, Stoic philosophy, all of those things that kind of I've intentionally used, whether I'm reading them, engaging with them, taking notes, journaling, all of those things. But what you come to find actually is that if you allow it and if you're paying attention, almost anything can shape you, right? I think about Saint Teresa of Avila said, don't like you're standing in front of a sink and you're washing dishes, right? It's a time where we mostly just drone out and daydream, or we think about the 10 other things that we should be doing with our time. But she said, don't just wash the dish because it's dirty. Wash the dish because someone you love will be using it next. So even in the act of washing the dishes, it's not particularly formative that we would think about, but it actually can be. All it really is about kind of just turning our attention just slightly. And so then you come to find out that you can take insight and you can be moved by something the person in front of you at the grocery store said while you're checking out. And so there are these intentional things, that I look to, but then it's also just kind of about paying attention to the stuff that's already there, stuff that's floating around for good or for bad.
I love that. I love that. I don't know if you experienced this growing up, but I feel like there was a lot of conversation about, or maybe not even conversation about, but just there was this idea of the sacred secular divide, right? Some of the things that we did were not really sacred.
Yeah.
The sacredness can only be found in a church building and things like that. And I love the way that you are talking about that intention and that mindfulness in every act, because for me, it brings the sacred into every single one of those moments. And that's so beautiful, being able to live my life without that divide, and without that disconnection there. So you mentioned that you've been doing some meditation and pulling from some different practices. What was it like when you first started meditating? Was that something that just flowed out of your practice of prayer, or mine definitely didn't, so I'm really interested to learn where that came from for you.
Yeah, honestly, it probably was not stemming from a practice of prayer, but maybe almost rethinking what prayer actually is and kind of needing a different outlet, looking for something that doesn't come with all the baggage that prayer often can.
Yes,
You know what I mean? Praying
I do.
to some entity to receive something or to withhold something, So that it's this exchange as opposed to this idea that you have all the raw materials right there within you, right? This just the breath, the conscious act of breathing. And so I can't say that I sought it out in the form of, reading books on it right away. It's almost kind of like something that I baby stepped my way into. But some of the most helpful kind of mindfulness and breathing and meditation practices I've kind of tried to adapt or bring into my life are those that don't put a lot of pressure out there at front, because I think maybe I was intimidated by meditation at first. Like, some people have this idea of emptying your mind as if that's a possibility, right? Like all of these thoughts that are constantly swirling around. And then we all know what happens. The moment you try to empty your mind is the moment it's never been more full of randomness, right? And so I came across this book from a guy named Dean Slider, and his approach to meditation was so simple. It just emphasized the fact that whatever pops up is supposed to be there. You don't have to resist it. You don't have to push it away. You don't have to fight it. You can observe it. That there's no kind of just sit there, don't scratch, don't sneeze, don't open your eyes. It took all of kind of the pressure that sometimes we associate and the stress that almost meditation can create, ironically enough, and kind of put all of that out of my mind. And so it just helped me to just be there with breath. And then, there's other practices that you can do with meditation, but that was kind of my initiation, and that's proven to be really helpful for me for sure.
Yeah, wow, I love that. Because I've been practicing that too, and I don't think I heard anyone say it. I think it like kind of came intuitively as I was practicing meditation, but that whatever arises is supposed to be there.
Yeah.
There have been so many other practices I've been incorporating in my life, letting myself feel my feelings, all sorts of things like that, and all of them are. I think one of my biggest things is I battle everything, right? So what you're saying right here about like when you sit down and you go to meditate and then everything comes in, I think I'm always fighting a battle in everything that I do, and I'm learning that if I'll just surrender to the moment, there's a lot of peace there.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a very practical approach that Dean Slider, I think it was the book, The Zen Commandments, which I highly recommend. I think it's in this one. He's written a few, but he just talks about something that we all do, right? You're at a stoplight, you're in your car, you're at a stoplight, and let's assume you're late for work, right? So we white knuckle. There's literally nothing we can do in that moment to turn the light green or to make the car move in front of us. So a meditation can simply be looking at your hands and realizing that you're clenched around the steering wheel, that you are trying to will the cars in front of you to move, and then to just kind of smile, release the grip on the steering wheel, and just breathe into that moment. And what we come to realize just by doing something that simple is how often we are clenched in a given day, right? How often we're trying to will something to be other than what it is. And now some things we have within our control, but most of the things we stress out about are things we have no control over anyways. And so just that simple practice of releasing your grip, breathing in that moment, smiling, just those little things that don't seem all of that spiritual or all that powerful actually really are. Because if we can get a hold of those things, it's those baby steps that bring us into more meaningful practice and stuff. So.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. You're just saying talking about more meaningful practice. And what has it been like for you outside of the context of Christianity to get into a practice of making meaning from wherever you find meaning? What has that been like, that journey?
Yeah, so, I heard, I can't remember exactly when, but I heard this. I was watching something with my kids, and it was kind of a documentary style video. And there was this family, First Nations people in one of the Dakotas, and they were around a table and they were getting ready to have a meal. And I believe it was the father or the grandfather was going to say a blessing over the meal. And he started this prayer with this phrase, "Dear incomprehensible sacred." And I just remember in that moment being like, that's it. Because what you can do in that idea of the incomprehensible sacred is you're acknowledging two things. That the moment you try to name something God or him or even her, the moment you start to give that kind of language, you automatically box something in. So this word incomprehensible, it opens everything up as wide as it could possibly be. And yet, then he came back around with the word sacred. So it's this acknowledgement that there is a sacredness to life, that there is something sacred that we all have within us, that we all can tap into. And so I remember when I heard that phrase, it kind of opened up so much stuff for me, right? And so, to go deeper with a practice, it doesn't require a lot of, it doesn't require a lot of training. It doesn't really require a lot of thought. I know one thing that I try to do, I don't always do this, and I notice when I'm not doing this, it takes a toll. But one thing I just try to do is that if I'm somewhere, if I'm all out for a walk on my own or whatever it might be, I'll just say, just this, just here, just now. Because what that does is just ground me in the fact that I am so many different places in my head. I'm ruminating on a conversation that didn't go well in the past. I'm dreading a conversation that's coming up in the future. I'm thinking about this list of things that needs to be accomplished or asking myself why I'm not accomplishing more. And so I'm missing out on the moment. And when I can do that, when I can even step into that phrase, it's something about that phrase that just snaps me into the present moment. And the thing is, let's say you're out for a walk, for instance. It doesn't really matter what season you find yourself in. It doesn't really matter what the location is, whether you're in an industrial zone or you're in this beautiful park. You start to notice where you are and what is around you. You start to tune into the sounds and the smells. And it doesn't seem like that would be all that meaningful, but there's so much meaning packed into each and every moment. The problem is we so often miss it. So, I mean, that's kind of like the first steps into trying to go somewhere deeper with it, because depth is not about, how many mantras you know or what spiritual texts you've memorized or what poems you can quote from Hafiz, even though I love all of those things. It's accessible to all of us right in the present moment. The problem is we just don't spend too much time in the present moment. So.
Absolutely. I love that. Just this, just here, just now. Is that right?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I love that. I have a very similar thing, and I think what's great about having you having those words that you say, and I have ones that have the same meaning, but I say are everyone can put their own spin on it. I think one of the things that anyone listening to this can take away from it is just because you hear someone say one thing, it may not feel like language that works for you. So find what works for you to keep you in the moment. I say, I'm present in this moment. This is a beautiful moment. And I like kind of keep that in my head. I do these long morning walks, and about a third of the way into my walk, I get onto native land, and it's like everything just goes peaceful. There's not anything moving. It's farmland, it's mountains. And just like you're saying, in that moment when I pause, I take out my earbuds, I'm just walking. I start by listening to the birds. I notice the plants that are waving in the breeze, all of those different pieces. It's almost like you take something. It's almost like a drug or
Right.
something, because it's like everything goes in really sharp and you're like, whoa, I'm here right now. Do you experience that?
Totally. And honestly, sometimes it doesn't happen. In fact, I've been on walks or things where I try to be in the moment and I'm just inundated for whatever reason on that day with thoughts and they just don't. But there are honestly moments where it's almost a kind of transcendence, and you're looking at a leaf or a tree or a bug crawling across the ground that you've seen 1,000 times, but it becomes in that moment so much more meaningful because you realize you're not in a rush to be anywhere. You realize that in that moment you don't need to change anything. There's nothing bringing pressure to you. There's no immediate situation that needs your response. And I think, if someone were able to listen to this, who was around 1,000 years ago, they would probably be so confused as to what we're talking about. But it's so bizarre that we're here because of all of these amazing technologies that allow us to be having this conversation in two different parts of the country. All of these things that bring so much beauty and help to our lives are also the very things that are stealing away our attention and our focus and our ability to be present in the moment. So it seems magical. What is average and probably normal for so much of society for us is magical because we don't get to experience it like people once did or like people still do in this world, believe it or not.
And you know that magic, so to speak, that is not something that's only accessible to some people.
Right.
That's something that's accessible to everyone.
Absolutely.
Like we can all connect that way. And you don't have to own anything, have anything. Like it's not a privileged thing. You can be in the middle of the city and go out and just connect with the sounds of other people around you. It's connecting with the whole and feeling like a part of something. Because Anthony, you're so on as to what I've been thinking about lately. About I know everyone talks like, technology connects us, but also we're more disconnected than ever, like
Yeah,
all
for
over on
sure.
repeat.
For sure.
But it's more than just disconnecting us as humans. It disconnects us when we're completely focused on that from the rest of the world, from the universe, from all of these things that really are connected to us.
Yeah, I had this insight a while back. I don't know if it's an insight, maybe that's too strong a word, but I remember thinking, I've lost the ability to daydream. Like daydreaming is something whenever you see it in a movie or, it's always something that's frowned upon. Like, hey, snap to reality. But daydreaming is one of those things that brings novelty, it brings creativity, it brings so many thoughts that we would otherwise not tap into and engage with. But what I notice is the longer I spend on my phone, for instance, I'm outsourcing my daydreaming to other people because a news feed, and this isn't, good. There's so many good things on my news feed, but just the act of scrolling in the way that I can often do, I don't have the downtime in between conversations or in between assignments or in between things that need to be done. If I'm constantly going to these devices or these platforms, I'm removing the ability to daydream. And so I remember intentionally taking, I think, a week off of, socials or whatever it was a while back, and just realizing, wow, there's daydreaming. Remember that? It was like nostalgia almost. And so I realized how much I was craving that. I realized how much I was missing, because so often we numb out and we try to avoid the voice in our head. But there is so much goodness to the voice in our head when it allows us to make connections that we otherwise wouldn't make, just daydreaming, just because of boredom, or because we're just in the middle of a routine event, or we're at a stoplight, or whatever it might be, we're sitting there with nothing else to do, and there's so much power in the ability to daydream. And I feel like, at least for me, it's something that can be easily lost. So those intentional practices of, like you said, you got to a place and you took your earbuds out. Why? Why would you do that? Because now you can engage with the sounds around you. You can, there's so much that you can just take away all of the distraction and all of the noise, except for the noise that you want in that moment. And so that's kind of just been something that I really want more of in my life, for sure.
Wow, I love that so much. I am a big daydreamer. And I really think that daydreaming can be a sacred practice, can be a
For
spiritual
sure.
practice, because when you are doing it with mindfulness and you are self-aware, there's so much you can learn about yourself from your daydreams. What is it? What is it that I really care about? Because what are my daydreams about? What is it that I'm afraid of? What is it, that I'm trying to overcome? Or maybe sometimes we use daydreams as an escape, which honestly, of all of the things that we could use as an escape, like that's probably one of the best
Definitely.
ones. But I think that we can learn too, just so much about ourselves through that as well. So I just love
Well,
that
it
you
makes
brought
me
that
think
up.
too about kind of this mindfulness meditation practice. One of the most simple forms of meditation is kind of the body scan, where whether you start at the top of your head or you start at the sole of your feet, doesn't matter, and you kind of just slowly scan your body. And what you realize in that moment, when you're thinking and putting all of your awareness in your toes, for instance, as you slide up, you realize, I didn't realize that my knee was hurting. But because I'm allowing my awareness to focus in on something, man, my knee is hurting. Or you get up kind of more towards your neck area and you realize how much tension you're holding, or your jaw, you realize, I didn't realize I was clenching, or I have this dull headache. And so just that body scan makes you realize how out of tune we can often be with our body. And so we can then relax in those moments. Well, the same is true for what you're talking about, daydreaming. Or, the things that we try to avoid, pop up in daydreams and they pop up in meditation. That noise that we hear that we were talking about earlier in the conversation, the noise of all of the stuff that's beating us in the face when we try to meditate, it's finally getting a chance to be heard. So it seems like an annoyance, and maybe it is, and some of it is just nonsense, popping up random things that who cares about. But there's some stuff in there that is it's just unaddressed problems. It could be, trauma. It could be, I need to apologize for something. It could be something bothered me and I didn't even give it the space to care about it. And it's just like the tension in our neck or the tension in our jaw. It's still there and it's festering and it's causing us pain. But it's only in those moments of mindfulness and awareness that we can actually engage with them and potentially do something about them. Sometimes the thing to do about them is finally just to give them a voice and then they leave on their own, right? We don't have to do much other than the fact that they've been seen, they've been heard, and that's okay. And that's what we needed. Other times we realize actually there is something. It's a phone call I can make and to set things right. It's a project that I've been meaning to work on, but I've been procrastinating. Whatever it might be, we can now engage it in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I love that you said that, that we give it a voice. So much of the work I've been doing over the past couple of years, in healing my own trauma, in building practices in that my life post-trauma, have been about allowing myself to give those parts, whether it's a thought, whether it's a feeling, whatever it is, a voice without judgment, without rejection, but just allow it to speak what it wants to say, and then it doesn't overwhelm me because I'm letting it have its moment,
Absolutely.
Wow, I love that. You said something else that I was thinking about. Oh, when you were talking about doing your body scan, I think if anyone's listening and you haven't started meditating yet, like just I would invite you to try it for a few minutes, and just do as Anthony said, like notice those parts. I remember I don't know, it's probably been 3 or 4 years ago, I started meditating, and the first thing I realized was I never breathed. Like
Right.
I was always holding my breath. And so
Yeah.
the first thing I did, which probably seems really obvious and mundane, but I would just practice breathing. I would practice noticing that I wasn't breathing, and then I would take a deep breath. And that has really changed so much and helped me so much with anxiety, because when you don't breathe, your body's not getting what it needs, right?
Exactly.
So I'm wondering for you, those practices, has that helped you in any specific way? Like what in particular, if you are comfortable sharing, has that helped you with and supported you in your life?
Yeah, I think it is on some level. I'm someone who I'm pretty laid back. I'm pretty easygoing. I don't get riled up much. But the thing is, like, if I do, it could go from, oh, he nothing bothers him to, oh, like, okay, he's mad, right? Like, oh, we're doing this. And so what I need for me personally, and this isn't going to be everybody's situation. That's why meditation and mindfulness and all of that helps us see where we are. There's no kind of one size fits all cookie cutter thing. We all learn different things. But what I can learn in these practices is how disconnected I can be from my own feelings, how disconnected I can be from where I'm at, what has bothered me, or even disconnected from the things that I'm really enjoying. Like to take the time and actually think about how meaningful something was or is. And so I think for me, that's one of the biggest things it does. It helps me to see, kind of to check my pulse, as it were, to see where I actually am in a given situation. Because I can let something go and not think about it, but it's like I said, it's still that stored up energy. It's still in there in the same way that aches and pains are in your knee or whatever. And so for me, that's what mindfulness and that's what kind of meditation and breathing and body scans, that's what that does for me kind of more than anything else, probably.
I love that. And I don't want to be stereotypical in any way, but I love that you said it helps you connect with your feelings. I don't always hear a lot of men talking about that. And I just wonder what that's like with
your friends, with your guy friends, with your community? I mean, are other like your other friends, are they exploring those things as well? Do you have conversations about that? I hope that's an okay question to ask.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I think you're right. I think one of, and this is one of the things that we try to get into with the attention collection, is kind of we're all given narratives, right? We're all given, whether it's very explicit or it's just kind of an undertone, we are given
Right.
these narratives of how we're supposed to function in society. And
Yeah.
those who identify as male, and you put a masculine tag on it, and kind of men are closed off and men don't engage with their feelings. And I think on some level that can be true a lot of times, but I also think that is something that it's a story that we're told so often, or it's in the water so much that we just accept it. And so I think for me, it's more wiring than it is any kind of attachment to masculinity or whatever. But I'm
Yeah.
definitely fortunate enough to have friends in my life that are open to those kinds of conversations, right? And so that's not all across the board. There are some friends that,
Right.
wouldn't have an interest in those conversations, but fortunately, those who are closest to me, not only are we able to talk about those things, but we're able to check in on one another. And we know each other
Yeah.
enough to say, hey, it looks like you're kind of in your head, or hey, it looks like you're detaching, or hey, so that's certainly not everybody's experience, unfortunately, but I'm definitely fortunate enough to have those people. So
I love that. I love that. And I would say too, you were saying, that's not everyone. I was thinking, well, that's not just people who identify as men. That is that's definitely people who identify as women too. I have the
absolutely.
same thing. I think we all do. It's and those cultural stories, may keep people from talking about it in public spaces, but
Oh,
we're all
100.
experiencing those things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, what has it been like? Because I want to talk a little bit more about community. I mean, growing up evangelical, growing up Pentecostal, everything was community, right? Like you were just that was kind of built in. So, what has it been like for you? And I, so Anthony and I haven't talked about this before, and we haven't been in contact that much over the past few years. So I don't know if you still go to church or anything like that. And I don't want you to have to talk about that unless you'd like to. But what has it been like for these practices that you have, like mindfulness, meditation, to find community around those? Or is that something that you feel is just a solo thing that you practice on your own?
No, I mean, I definitely have friends who practice kind of mindfulness, and we talk about it. But it definitely is, has been a departure, certainly a departure from what we grew up with. And just
Right.
a word on community, it's interesting that there can be experiences where community is the lifeblood. It's everything. And then you realize that that community was built on a premise of an assent to belief, or you fall within certain parameters, or you
Yeah.
check certain boxes. So you are in, you are tight-knit, you are adopted, you are loved and accepted until you take a check out of this box, or until you step out into this lane. And then all of a sudden, that community almost dries up overnight in so many ways. So it can definitely be a
Yeah.
whiplash effect, and it certainly has been in some cases in my life. And so I'm definitely still a part of church. I'm definitely still kind of even a leader within church, but it's a different church than what you and I, have had experienced growing up. And
Right.
it's for me, it's been an integration of so many things, because what you come to realize when you step outside of your box. Like, we grew up in a very fundamentalist camp, right? And
Yeah.
so, not only, from a Christian perspective, even Christians weren't Christians, right? Like, most Christians
Right.
weren't even like they we were
They were all
like,
going to hell.
exactly, we were that point, whatever percent group that is actually getting in. Everybody else is, it's just smoke and mirrors and it's fake. So we were next level on the fundamentalist scale. But
Sure.
I've thankfully, through the help of so many conversations with people, experiences with people who are outside of that bubble, so many books and just so many things have kind of helped to shape me. And I think that's probably why I'm so passionate about talking about the things that shape us. And so, you know, being, you know, bumping into so many different traditions, you bump into Sufi mystics and you bump into Buddhists and you bump into, you know, like I said, Stoic philosophy. And you realize that there are some major differences in a lot of these things. But at the core, in the best version of these traditions, they're essentially getting at the same idea. And a lot of that is built on the need and the drive for community. And so for me, community has looked like trying to remind myself and kind of those around me that even though we seem, especially now, so incredibly divided, that that's actually not a possibility, that we actually can't be divided. Because what hurts me ultimately down the road hurts you. And if we, and I think we're seeing this in climate change, I think we're seeing this socioeconomically, I think we're seeing this politically, this idea that one team wins is just further evidence that we're all losing. And so my journey in community is just trying to remind myself and be a part of groups of people who really want to see the flourishing of all humanity, as possible as that is. I mean, it's such a struggle because we see ourselves as divided from one another. But so just trying to change that narrative for myself and others is, has kind of been the endeavor.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And, you know, I love that you were saying, like, we can't be divided. Like, we're all connected. It made me think of, I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a big space nerd.
Did not. Like, tell me more. Really
big, yeah. And so one of my friends, and I, this is not, I'm not like trying to name drop or something here. I'm not even going to tell you who it is, but one of my friends is an astronaut and he's been up on the, International Space Station. And there's this thing that's called the overview effect. And it happens when, someone goes into space and sees the Earth from above. And it's this sense of connectedness. It like completely shifts that person's perspective. I mean, obviously physically it shifts it, but also like emotionally and mentally it shifts it. And so they may go up there like being devoted to a political party, being whatever. And when they get up there or to a country or whatever it is, but when they get up there, they see how everything is connected there, how it's just one. It's just one planet, and all of those pieces rely on each other, and it completely transforms them. And when they come back, they're different. I mean, obviously they're different, but they're different because of that specific thing. And I love that. Like, I've always loved that. I think that it's so fascinating. And I wonder what would happen if we would practice stepping outside of ourselves. And I think meditation helps with that, but in seeing that, you know, there's kind of language about this in some of the meditations I listen to, but seeing that the person that we're talking to is not other, they are the same, you know, they may be saying something different, but, you know, they're just another version of us.
Yeah. It's kind of the Rastafarian idea of the I and I. It's not the me and you, and it's not even the kind of the we, it's the I and I. So me personally, and then the other person I'm beholding is the I as well. We're all in this thing. I think of this ancient teaching of kind of looking at waves and the ocean. So it's this concept that we often see the waves and we're kind of so amazed by the way, especially if I'm a surfer, I'm chasing the biggest wave I can possibly find. And I'm impressed by the size of it. And you can do that. But what you do on the shore is you recognize that that wave is emerging from one source, and no matter how high it gets, no matter how long it lasts, it ultimately returns to the same source. And so there's this practice of recognizing that we do this as humans. We look to the waves to our left and right, which represent other people, and we compare ourselves, the size of our wave, to the size of other people's waves. And we try to swell our wave up so it looks impressive. And imagine dumping a bucket of water on a wave to try to make it big. It's just ridiculous. But we try to do this. And what we realize is that we all came from the same source. And we're all returning to the same source. You can put religion into that mix or just, you know, science. That's just an irrefutable fact. We come from the same source, we return to the same source. And so it's about being less wave and more ocean. And when we can get below the surface, we recognize that we are inextricably connected to one another. It's, you know, it's the Emma Lazarus quote of that until we are all free, we are none of us free. Right. You know, until we are all liberated, none of us are liberated. But we spend so much time with kind of measuring tapes out, measuring waves and seeing who's doing better than the other person. And it's just a ridiculous notion. But once again, we get caught into these stories of competition and we get into these stories of, you know, trying to outdo one another, or even if it's not outdo, just to align and can compare next to somebody. Yeah. But the further you get out, and I think literally it took your friend to get into space to be able to have this perspective, the further you zoom out, you recognize how ridiculous those notions are.
Yeah,
it's the notion of a border. We have borders that we protect. What is a border? It's an imaginary line that someone at some point in history made up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it is an imaginary line. I know coming from the States, like borders are very important here, right?
Yeah.
Last year I was traveling and I walked the Camino de Santiago, but it was a Portuguese route. Yeah. I went from Portugal up into Spain, and I had to take this boat, this basically like a ferry, from just across this river, I think, from Portugal into Spain. And I get over there and I just get off and keep walking. There's no one there. There's no border whatsoever. I just have crossed over this water and now I'm in Spain. Like it was mind blowing to me.
Right.
Because in the US, it's such a big deal, you know? And there it was just like, okay, well, you're here now. Keep going.
Right. And you're looking over your shoulder like, is this okay? Can I do
it?
It
was. I was like, am I going to get in trouble?
Right.
Who's checking my passport? And it just doesn't work that way. But I love that. And I love how you said less wave, more ocean. And I have phrases posted above my desk, and I'm going to write that in big letters and put it up there. That's so important, especially right now. I mean, we're in the season of politics, which I don't think that there's a season without politics anymore.
Right.
But, you know, people are getting ready to vote or hopefully have already started voting. And there is still so much, well, even more divisiveness. And so I love how you're talking about that. You know, as you talk about that, I think the less wave, more ocean, I'd love to hear your thoughts on how that does or doesn't affect the way that you speak out about things, the way you speak out about injustice that you see in the world around you. What does that look like? How does that idea inform how you speak up?
Yeah, for me, it really creates quite a tension because, you know, there are, I can't tell you how many things I've typed into my phone in my notes because I know better than to type them right into the potential, you know, platform that I'm going to post in.
Yeah.
But I've typed notes in my phone. And so for me, the practice of seeing less wave, more ocean is stepping back and reading that, something that I've written, whether it's, you know, talking about Black Lives Matter, you know, marriage equality, whatever it could be, whatever the conversation is, climate, and reading it and knowing my perspective. I already know my point of view, but wondering if somebody who has the polar opposite view of mine, are they going to read that and notice any kind of grace? Are they going to see a bridge? Are they going to see that I'm not trying to demean them or to condescend to them? Yeah. But then there's the tension that still exists there. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to call hate hate. That doesn't mean I'm not going to call racism racism or sexism or xenophobia. You have to very clearly call things what they are, or you don't do justice. You should just probably not even speak on an issue if you're not going to be candid enough to speak against things that need to be spoken against and speak for things that need to be spoken for. But is there a way to put bridges in the things that you say so that people can say, like, I fundamentally disagree with you, but I'm willing to cross over here and see what you're talking about? Most recently, I wrote a post about, you know, there's this whole thing with the statues coming down, and one of the
Right.
conversations went to Jesus statues. And so this automatically created this huge conversation about what in the world do we do with that. And I wrote this post called Dethroning White Jesus.
Yeah.
And it was very much like in favor of, yes, why do we have white depictions of Jesus? Because I don't know, a Middle Eastern Jew probably didn't look like he was a member of ABBA at
No,
some point
never.
in life. And so I wrote this thing, and I, you know, for the people I knew were going to read it who are Christians, I put Bible verses in there and just tried to engage as thoughtfully, generously, and meaningfully as possible. And I got somebody who is a very strong, you know, outspoken conservative. And I don't label them conservative. They almost every time they engage with me, they call themselves
Right.
conservative. So I'm just giving their label. But they said to me, I read this post, I read this blog 3 times to try to wrap my head around it, to try to, and they started off reading it with anger, but for whatever reason, they were able to get through it 3 times
Yeah.
to try to get rid of some of the walls that immediately go up, get rid of some of the fight or flight response that happens when somebody presents ideas that we're not used to, familiar with, or happy about. And they came back around and said, I think I agree. Or at least I think I understand. And so now that doesn't happen every time. I can't tell you how many people have called me divisive or whatever else. So you can't please everyone. You can't make everyone happy. You are going to rub other people's feather, you know, rub them the wrong way. But if I go into it with the idea and the hope and the goal that I'm trying to show that we are not divided, that we need to come together, there's a chance for those things to be helpful.
Yeah,
So.
I love that. I love that. And I just keep thinking, like, I wrote this note to myself, and it was about, like, when you're doing this work of healing, and to me, what you just described is a work of healing, is a practice of healing. You are shining light on something to help heal that, right? To address it, to change it, and
The
also to
hope.
heal it. But I wrote a note to myself and just said, reaching one person, or like making one person think differently about something when I am doing a work of healing, there is no small audience. There is no small work in that, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think about people who have said, I don't agree with you, but I appreciate the way with which you
Yes.
operate, how you've handled this. Now, like I said, I don't want to paint a picture that I'm, you know, going on, you know, the interwebs and changing people's lives and everybody's bringing a tissue to my posts. There are people who don't like them. There are people who are indifferent to them, whatever. But the meaningful exchanges that I've had with people who disagree, it's not this coming away completely transformed. Because I have to also come, or at least I have to attempt to come with the humility of knowing that there are some things that I believe today that I'm not going to believe in 10
Yeah.
years. So there has to be kind of this flexibility of understanding to know that I also have to be willing to learn and to grow and to be changed. And so recently I've had conversations with people, you know, around conservative people. Self-identified conservative people who about guns and about gun rights. And I've come in with a very strong position about guns and assumptions. And I've had conversations with people who have opened my eyes to angles and ideas that I didn't see. Now, that didn't change my view
Right.
about things that need to change and policies that need to be enacted and certain things that we need to do as a country. But what it did was it allowed me to see into the mind of people who think differently than me, and not just, we can so often create caricatures of people. And if I'm willing to do that to somebody else, why would I ever assume somebody else is going to give me the benefit of the doubt,
Yeah.
to see the best version of my argument? Because we so often argue the worst version of other people's arguments,
Yep.
as opposed to, no, I'm going to try to see the best version of what you're trying to say and then have a conversation about it. But we often just don't take the steps to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, empathy. Like, I mean, I know that word is just overused right now, but that's what I hear in what you're saying, empathy. And, you know, I love that when we're willing to hear someone's story. No one, very few people are as evil as you think they are. I mean, that's just not the case. People make choices, or they take stances out of their experiences or out of self-preservation. And so you doing that, and, you know, us having those conversations allows us to, like you said, understand the best version of their argument or of their perspective.
Well, I think I think that's a benefit, a gift that you and I have coming out of the tradition we came out of. And we couldn't be probably farther, you know, ideologically from where we started. And so I think it gives us this realization of how people can change, of how people can evolve, and how people hold on to things that they're given. And it is only later in life, potentially, that they're able to step far enough away to find other ideas and to be exposed to other communities and people and to grow and to shift and change. So I try, I don't always do this well, for sure, but I try to remind myself of some of the positions I once held, some of the ideas I once thought to be the truth. And that usually sobers me up a little bit to give people kind of the benefit of the doubt and give them the grace that I would hope they would extend to me as well.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And, you know, overnight change is not really a thing. We see it all around us in nature. Growth and change takes time. And so you were talking like there are things that we believed that we no longer believe. I think that has been a progression. You know, we can look back 5 years ago, we can look back 2 years ago, we can see ourselves now, and it was not an overnight thing. It takes time. And Absolutely. Who will be in five more years is something we can't quite know yet. We can move intentionally towards that, but there are things we just can't see. So
absolutely true.
So I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up, but I'd love for you to share anything, just a last word with us, anything maybe that we've talked about or something we haven't talked about, something you just want to leave people with, a thought.
Yeah, one of the things that I try to keep out front is this idea that we so often are waiting to arrive somewhere. We're waiting to achieve something financially, scholastically, relationally, whatever it might be. And that's good to have those goals and endeavors. There's nothing wrong inherently with the pursuit of those things. But to just try to remember that our lives right now in the moment we find ourselves in are just as worthy of our attention, of our noticing, of our love, of our generosity, that we so often stop ourselves from being able to grow and evolve and change and develop when we are so focused on an unforeseen future, when there's so much goodness, there's so much contentment, there's so much peace, even in the middle of the worst situations, that can be found if we just pay attention, if we just lean into the lives that we have right now. Is there trauma here? Is there distress here? Is there confusion here? Have we had, you know, dark or harmful situations? Maybe. Do we feel like in this moment we could achieve more? Do we need more discipline? Whatever it might be, all of those things might very well be true. But the first step to going forward is to take an accurate assessment of where we currently are. So that's kind of what I hope to do. That's what we talk about with the attention collection, just kind of changing that perspective, hopefully makes all the difference.
I love that. I love that. Thank you so much. This conversation, I know I almost just fell back into like old school language and said, is really going to bless someone.
It's going to bless your soul.
It's going to bless your soul. But I already know some of the people that this is going to be really meaningful to. So remember, people, just this, just here, just now. Thank you so much, Anthony, for joining me. Take care.
Thank you. It's been awesome.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today. If you'd like to follow Anthony, you can follow him at his podcast, at Attention Collection, or you can follow him at his personal account, at Anthony Garcy, G-A-R-C-Y. As always, you're welcome to support the show by Venmoing us at Melissa B. Hawks. And I hope you take this with you through your week. Just this, just here, just now. Love ya. Mean it.